We're going to talk a little bit about jobs, how to get you your best job ever, and additionally some expert advice from a lawyer who can tell you what to do and what to look out for. I think this particular conversation is incredibly important because right now the number of job vacancies across Canada has reached an all-time high in March, and there are actually about for every 10 job seekers, according to the Globe and Mail story, there are 10 job vacancies. So for every 10 people looking for work, there are 10 jobs out there. So this is really the time if someone who is listening wants to level up and find a new job, or you are a student and the summer is around the corner and you want to find a well-paying gig, this is the time. And I'm excited to help you do that. I'm going to welcome our first guest, John Pincus. He's an employment lawyer and partner with Sam For You, Timarkin LLP. Hi, John. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Good. I like how you were upping the anticipation before you joined us. well done. So I really want to talk a little bit about jobs and what people who are listening and are possibly seeking a new job should think about. So first question, let's start with what should people who are looking for new employment think about in today's job market?
Well, there's a few things. Normally, we talk about just looking at the terms of the employment contract, but one of the things that you want to look at is whether it's an employment contract at all. Because what many people are being offered, especially in the, you know, in the context of the gig economy, are these independent contracts, right? These contracts where this person is supposedly running their own business yet working for the company at the same time, when often that's really not what's going on. Now, while those are not typically enforceable, you don't want to sign something that you're not comfortable getting into, because in addition to severance implications, it also has implications for employment standards like overtime, vacation, statutory holidays. That's the first thing you want to look out for. And the other thing you want to look out for are clauses that limit your entitlements if you're let go, limit your severance entitlements, which can be huge.
And so I want to back up and kind of break down some of the terms you just used. So let's talk about gig economy, gig jobs, contract, and full-time. What are the differences between those three?
Well, contract's a bit of a lot of people use the word contract. It's commonly used to mean independent contractor. Right? So when I say, because everyone who is employed is technically employed under a contract. It might be a verbal contract. It might be a written contract. But the key here is if you are deemed an independent contractor, right? So normally, you know, you come to work every day, you do work for them. They have the opportunity to direct your work. An independent contractor is like the person who comes to your house to do a one-time job for you, sends you a bill, and then goes on to service his or her other clients. So if you're working in an office, but you are being treated for the purposes of your entitlements like the person who, you know, who does the one-off job for you, then you're being treated illegally as an independent contractor. And that has employment consequences, that could have tax consequences. And that's the kind of thing that you need to look out for. It happens, I find, particularly in the IT field. A lot of IT jobs are treated as independent contractors, but it happens in other places too. And you are hugely limiting your rights if you sign up as an independent contractor. So if it is that kind of situation where you are going to have a whole bunch of clients and you want that freedom, and great, that might be the right move for you, but often it's not.
And so let's take another scenario. You are a contractor, you've signed up for a particular job, but lo and behold, it's not for you. You're not happy with it. Can you renegotiate that contract? Can you leave before the terms of your service are done? What happens then?
Sure. That happens all the time. I have people who come to me where they're either presented with a new contract or they want to renegotiate their contract. And really, the watchword here is leverage, right? Do you have leverage? Does the company need you as much as you need them? Have you become integrated with them? Have you gotten positive feedback? Have you developed a good relationship? That might be the time to go to them and say, you know, I'm thinking about our contract, and I'd like to have some more security. I think I'm really melding here, but I'm not really comfortable with the arrangement that I'm under. And then you could, at that point, you can say, hey, why don't I put together something, and you tell me if you're prepared to sign off on it. And then you can have an employment lawyer prepare it for you and start the conversation that way. There is no rule against renegotiating your contract partway through. In fact, employers try to do that all the time.
And so I want to, you know, there's this urban rumor that's gone around for years that if you do work somewhere and perhaps you parted ways with your employer, not under the best circumstances, that it's impossible for them to give you a negative recommendation or report on your time with them. Is that true?
I can tell you definitively that's not true, because I've actually been involved in litigation involving that very issue. An employer absolutely is allowed to give a negative reference, as long as they don't both do it falsely and maliciously. So if they give a negative reference, and even if some of the things that they've said aren't entirely true, employers are given quite a lot of leeway to give what their opinion is, right? So if the employer didn't think you were a good worker, even though you may have gotten some positive reviews, you might not be able to do anything about it. So one of the things that we do when we're negotiating severance packages often is that we negotiate protections, contractual protections, so that they don't have to worry about that. Because otherwise, if you've left off on not so great terms, employers do have quite a bit of leeway there.
And so what about people who are applying for jobs that are outside of their province or even outside of their country? I mean, there are a lot of remote options right now, and there are a lot of companies that are outside of Canada who are okay with employing Canadians, even if they don't live in the same country. Are there any rules, any protections, anything that workers can do to protect themselves in that situation?
Yeah, that's a great question, and actually one that I get all the time, because you're quite right. It's become more and more frequent for those kinds of arrangements to be concluded. And here's what people need to know. If you work in Ontario, you are subject to Ontario laws. In fact, if you worked in Ontario and you do some work outside of Ontario, but that is a continuation of the work that you're doing in Ontario, then you're going to be under the Employment Standards Act, most likely. If it's a provincially regulated industry, you are still going to be governed by Ontario law. So it's not like you get hired by a company in, let's say, Oklahoma or Indiana, and then all of a sudden you start doing some business trips to Indianapolis, for example, and you come back and say, oh, now, so for the time you're in Indianapolis, we're going to pay you according to Indiana law. Doesn't work like that. They still have to pay you according to Ontario law.
And that's if you're located in Ontario. Like, is there a number of days you have to be here, or is it just based on whether or not you consider your main residence as Ontario?
Yeah, so this is often a hotly debated issue. But typically what I like to say is, if the arrangement was made in Ontario, so the employment contract was made in Ontario, you started working in Ontario, and you're just incidentally working in another country, or it kind of gradually you start to work a little bit more often in the other country, but it's still primarily based in Ontario, then you're going to be subject to Ontario. In other cases, if you live in Ontario, but you actually work in the United States, or you start working in Ontario, but the job completely changes and it goes completely to the United States, that gets a little bit more complicated, and you may actually lose your rights as a Canadian employee. So what you may want to do in that instance is ensure that you negotiate a contract that says you're going to be governed by the laws of Canada and the province you reside in.
Okay, and I'm going to round up with one more question, which honestly, we're going to have a further discussion about this later in the show, but I really want to know, is there anything that people should be looking out for when applying for jobs online? There are tons of scams and fraudulent posts online portraying amazing, you know, jobs with benefits, etc. Is there anything that people should be looking out for, or anything you've seen that have raised red flags?
You know, to be perfectly honest with you, that issue is a little bit outside my wheelhouse, and I don't typically deal with that. But I would think that probably best practice is to stick with well-known, vetted job postings, such as Indeed, Workopolis, Monster, those kinds of things. And so most of my clients do try and stick with that, and I haven't seen them land in hot water. But the key moment is actually not when you apply, but when you start, right? So if you're starting and you think this, you know, it might be a little bit of a shady arrangement, you may want to take some steps to verify the company at that time before you start working. But that's about all as much as I can say about that. It's not typically an issue that comes up in my practice.
Well, you know, that's okay, because we'll be delving into that a little bit later in the show. I actually just have one more. When we're talking about employment contracts, so there are people who are like getting ready to sign on the dotted line, is there something in a contract that people should be looking for? And if you can't afford a lawyer to look over your contract, are there other steps you can take?
Well, the tricky thing is there really is no substitute to getting legal advice, whether you're an employer, thinking about giving a reference, or an employee thinking about signing a contract. So you really do have to think about whether this is, look at your options, first of all, because there's often different options in terms of getting a lawyer who can help you review it. But yes, there are definitely circumstances where that might not be practical. The one thing that I would look out of above all other things, the things that typically get employees in hot water, are those termination clauses, right? Because they don't know, they just, it refers to Employment Standards Act. You think, oh, okay, great, they'll comply with the Employment Standards Act. And what you really have done is you've just signed away tens of thousands of dollars of severance if you're let go.
And I'm so sorry, we have to end that there, but thank you so much, John, for breaking that all down for me.